Blog Talk Radio.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. We're the renegades in this atomic age. This atomic age, we're renegades. We're renegades in this atomic age. This atomic age, we're renegades. We're renegades. Since the prehistoric ages and the days of ancient Greece, on down to the Middle Ages.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Political Universe Radio Show. I am your host, Jason Easley. And on this week's exciting radio program, we will be wrapping up the GOP debate from Thursday. We'll be talking about winners and losers. We'll be going through a little bit of potential what-if matchups for 2008. We also might get into the Iraq War a little bit, too, if we have time. Right now, I would like to bring in my friend and co-host. You know him. You love him. He's the human Spider-Man. Ladies and gentlemen, please, please, please say hi to George. Hi, George.
Hello, Jason.
How was that for an introduction?
I was touched. I really felt it here.
I stayed up all night working on it.
And it's very much appreciated.
By the way, we're flying solo today.
What's that?
We're flying solo today.
Okay. I understand that Will will not be joining us.
He's got his news in us for us today, but yeah, he won't be here live.
Okay.
He sent me over a news report. Also, I want to mention to you, first off, George, I didn't have a chance to email you because we were both busy out watching Spider-Man 3.
Yes, and being disappointed by it.
What did you think?
I was disappointed. It was, I would say, like, the word of the day for that film was frustrating because it started off on such a good note, and by the halfway point, it was like all of a sudden everything just kind of went into overdrive. And the wrong things were being concentrated on, and before I realized it, it was the whole, you know, like black suit, you know, like segment had pretty much solved itself. And next thing I knew, you know, like, oh, there's Venom, and it just felt like he was shoehorned in there, and it seemed very much like this is what happens when Sam Raimi is dealing with a character that he doesn't particularly care for.
Yeah,
he seemed to intentionally give it the short end of the stick, and that's exactly what he did.
It's not just the Eddie Brock Venom character. The movie tried to do too much.
Yes,
it just tried to do way too much with too many new characters in too many different places. What made the second movie especially genius was a relatively simple dual storyline.
Yes,
that integrated well together, and it just flowed perfectly from beginning to end. This movie starts off with a bang. Gets really talky for a while.
I actually didn't mind the talking. I thought the restaurant scene was fantastic.
But
that's mainly because of, you know, like it had a big help from Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the man can, you know, like, I'm, you know, like, I am a fan. I am a Bruce fan, so.
Yeah, see, here's what I thought. See, I took three of my friends' kids to the movies.
Oh, boy.
Because I wanted to kind of see their reaction.
Yeah.
And the theater I went to, our little theater here, we have four screens, and two of the four screens were showing this movie all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the theater was still packed at like 2:30 in the afternoon.
Right.
So we're in there, and 75% of the people there have kids with them.
Oh, boy.
And I thought, I know how long this movie is, and this isn't going to play really well.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of edgy kids, because this was a very talky, emotional movie.
Mm-hmm.
This was almost like the growing up version of Spider-Man.
Right. This is basically like
30 minutes or so.
This is kind of like what happens when you take your kid to go see the 2003 Hulk. same sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you expect more action if you've seen the first two movies, but this movie, it tries to make up for it at the very end with a really boffo action final fight sequence, but it just falls short because the action seems out of place whenever two-thirds of the movie before that has been a relative lack of action.
True, and the thing that kills me is that there could have been just a few little tweaks here and there. You know, I'm sure you, you know, like, obviously remember well the dance scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you had taken that out, kept in the scene of him strutting on the street, I thought the strutting on the street was fantastic.
Yeah,
because
it
wasn't so much of him strutting as it was the reactions of everybody around him.
Yeah, and you know what? That's about as evil as Peter Parker can get.
Right, but at the same time,
this nerdy kind of arrogant, you know what I mean?
Right, exactly. It's just like, that's what a nerdy-looking, you know, like, guy and everything is supposed to look like when he's trying to be cool. Now, if you take that and synchronize that in with a montage similar to the first film, where they had different people commenting on, you know, Spider, you know, this thing coming out of the sky and saving them and everything right after he first put on the real costume, and if you change that around to have different people kind of complaining about how he's acting and how he's being so much more aggressive
and
everything.
All of a sudden you have a more compelling movie. I thought if he would have cut this movie to about 2 hours, it would have been perfect.
Yeah.
He could have lost 20 minutes in there and not really missed anything. And I also think you can either do sort of the foreshadowing of the love triangle, or you can do the Harry Green Goblin story, or you can do the Sandman, or you can do Venom.
But you can't do it all.
Four in the same movie.
Yeah, and
to do two.
What kills me is, and this is something that I'll be going on with because I decided not to write a full review of it on its own and everything. I'm going to actually put that into my next edition of the UBS Evening News.
Oh, but I think you just set a new record for cheap plug.
I'm pretty good at that. I'm getting the hang of that.
Yeah,
but the
like 129, and you'll be calling in on the host panel, giving your plug one of those host cards.
Hey, and I still have another column to plug, so I'll get to that.
We'll get to that at the end of the show.
Oh yeah. But the element that was the most frustrating for me was the fact that after everything was all wrapped up, after the production was finished, and while they're getting ready to sell it, you know, like while it's ready to come out, you have both Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire talking about how they're open to doing a fourth film. Well, where exactly do you go from here after you've stuffed so much into just one film?
This film, you could do a fourth. To me, a fourth film would be the Venom movie,
and that's what it should have been.
Should have done here.
It should have ended with, you know, like, you could have like the big boffo action sequence here.
It should have ended there.
But, you know, like, but then afterwards, you have him pull the suit off. And you have it, you know, like, you have some, you know, like, you have a dealing with, you know, with Eddie Brock and everything that kind of closes the deal on that. You basically cancel, you know, like, you close the whole Harry Osborn storyline the way they did. But then at the same time, you have that. But at the same time, you have that Venom character kind of looming. And all of a sudden, if they did the whole, like, you know, mouth opening, you know, quick zoom in and then credits, it would have been perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was Sam Raimi saying, if this was my last movie, I'm going to tie everything up.
Right.
As best I can.
Which is the problem with all third chapters in these trilogies.
Yeah. Well, except for the Lord of the Rings.
Well, Lord of the Rings, I don't even consider that to be like the part of a trilogy because they shot all of that in sequence.
Together, which was something I talked about yesterday with a friend of mine. If they would have shot these movies closer together,
mm-hmm.
they might have flowed between 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Because 3 gets off to a good start where 2 kind of left off.
Yeah.
But then in the middle somewhere, it just falls off the face of the earth and goes into this direction.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to give away too much, but I think everybody in the world has seen this movie.
I think
probably
so.
Probably by Monday.
Judging by the numbers, yeah.
So let's switch over to politics. We do have extra time today, so we can feel free to spend 5 or 10 minutes talking about Spider-Man. But
yes.
We could actually do a whole show on this Spider-Man movie if we wanted.
Oh, we definitely could.
Did you get a chance to watch the GOP debate?
I was able to watch some of it. I was able to get through the first segment dealing with the different candidates talking about Iraq. I was able to get into the segment where they were talking about amending the Constitution to allow people like Governor Schwarzenegger to run for office. And then all of a sudden the internet decided, you know what, I'm just gonna take a break.
So then it just kind of collapsed.
It kind of collapsed on me. I did have the transcript to help me out. So
you kind of know what went down.
It went down like right around like the third time when one of the candidates was asked about Schwarzenegger.
Okay, well then you got about halfway through or more, about 3/4 almost.
Something like that.
What did you think of what you saw, read?
I thought the main thing about it was that if the Democratic debate proved that that we needed more ample time and everything for a real debate, then the Republican side of that like doubled that immediately, because I didn't get a damn thing from practically almost anybody regarding anything. It seemed like they tried to say something, but at the same time, it's just like their constraints just kept them to just bullet points at the most.
It's the problem there is that they're all boxed in by President Bush.
Yeah.
They can't run too far away from the president, but they're trying to run far enough away so they're not associated with them. It's the Al Gore in 2000 problem.
True.
Where he wanted to stay away from the Clinton scandals, but he wanted to acknowledge the good things about the Clinton presidency. Well, you can't do both.
Right. And God knows McCain tried.
Giuliani came on Friday and praised Bush for killing Saddam and all this and that.
Right.
But he totally didn't acknowledge the war on the rest of the war.
Right.
And you can't have that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Giuliani started off strong. I thought Giuliani started off with a nice...
Yeah, whereas McCain almost, I wrote my column, McCain almost self-destructed on the Iraq question.
Oh, yeah.
Right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was just too fired up, too aggressive, and that was the wrong question to give him at the start of the debate.
Yeah, I would definitely say that when it came to McCain's question about it, I did not appreciate the fact that all he did was just repeat the same exact rhetoric that the Bush administration had been doing.
Yeah, and the problem is that's what probably made the news on Friday as far as the sound bites from that debate from McCain.
Yeah.
The rest of his debate was actually pretty good. I mean, he started getting into how he approves stem cell. He doesn't oppose stem cell research. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't oppose gay marriage. You started to get into more of the real McCain, but the problem was he got hit with a rock early. The first 15, 20 minutes of that debate went to a rock.
Right.
By then, no one else is going to really – a rock's a big issue. Taxes, abortion, everything else are really way down the list.
Yeah.
So it's kind of tough for McCain to actually give out a good positive, have something positive to me was come out of that debate when his most fiery, aggressive answer was on Iraq.
And it was not only on Iraq, but it was also on an unprovoked response to a question that wasn't even there about Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
I thought
that was actually his best moment when he pledged to chase us, follow us, Osama bin Laden to the gates of hell.
But then smiled. It was just like,
I believe him.
Yeah, I know. I believe him too. But at the same time,
believe that if John McCain right now could be parachuted into the Afghanistan Pakistan border by himself with a Bowie knife, he would try to hunt down Osama bin Laden.
Oh, I don't doubt that at all. You know, like the only thing that kind of threw me off about that whole thing was the simple fact that he wasn't asked about that, and that's the thing that really kind of you know, that hurt me. It was the same thing that had screwed up.
Did it in the Democratic debate too.
It was the same thing that screwed up Richardson before. You know, like when he was when he would constantly like go, you know, like go past the
They didn't have talking points on what they were asked.
Right.
And they were all referring to they weren't referring, they didn't have it with them, but they were all pulling back from their prep on this debate.
Right.
They weren't really prepared to live answer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as Mitt Romney goes, what did you think of our Mormon candidate?
I actually kind of liked him. You know, like there was something about him that you know, like that that worked regarding his full on like dedication to the to the accomplishment of the mission and everything. Like, I mean, the fact that he said, you know, like we will catch Osama and he will die. You know, like that was just something about that.
Yeah,
it was just like
he's trying to cover up his mistake that previously when he said the war on terror isn't just about Osama bin Laden, and Osama bin Laden's only one person. So he was trying to make up some ground there. But
true.
Yeah, I think Mitt, you know, Mitt's sort of the Republican John Edwards.
Yeah.
He's kind of pretty, kind of flashy, but, you know, sometimes when you look below the surface, there isn't a whole lot there.
Right.
And the parallel is kind of striking, actually. But speaking of Mitt, I found a little audio in the debate, and we're going to – this should just – in case anybody missed this debate, this should tell you really what this debate was all about. Only a few seconds long for us to listen in.
Daniel Duchovnik from Walnut Creek, California, wants to know, what do you dislike most about America?
Gosh, I love America. I'm afraid I'm going to be at a loss for words because America for me is not just our rolling mountains and hills and streams and great cities. It's the American people. And the American people are the greatest people in the world. What makes America the greatest nation in the world is the heart of the American people. Hardworking, innovative, risk-taking, God-loving, family-oriented American people. It's that optimism we thank Ronald Reagan for. Thank you, Mrs. Reagan, for opening up this place in his memory for us. It is that optimism about this great people that makes this the greatest nation on earth.
Okay.
I just felt a pair of lips on my ass.
This was about as substantive as this debate got right there.
Wow.
I mean, what do you hate about America? Well, golly, shucks, gee whiz, America is just wonderful.
I just got like a
he's
flashback to 1955. You know, like this.
He's running for president. He's not going to say, oh, wow, America is terrible. Down with America.
Right. But at the same time, though, I mean, even though Kerry lost in 2004, his whole setup was America can do better and help is on the way. It was just like that's optimism right there. When you're saying
the
that there's nothing wrong with America, that's not optimism. That's delusion.
That's the real problem with the Republican ticket is they're not acknowledging reality.
Right.
Like here's what if Mitt Romney would have said wanted to say, well, if there's one problem with America, maybe it's our environment's not as well taken care of as it could be. Maybe global warming.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can understand him not wanting to touch the traditional liberal social issues, poverty, racism, that kind of thing. But he could have easily touched on the universally popular stuff like global warming and the environment and what we can do to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
Or America's hooked on oil. I would have even fallen for that one.
Right.
But Chuck's golly gee whiz, America's just wonderful and I love being here was just lame.
It was very
that
lame.
And this was the last question of the debate, or the next to last question.
Hmm.
Would it be a good idea for Bill Clinton to return to the White House?
Why would they ask?
Chris Matthews asked that question.
Why would they ask a question like that to a bunch of Republican candidates?
Yeah. And they asked him, if you could change one thing about the Bush presidency, what would it be?
Hmm.
They're not going to tell you the truth.
Right.
These questions were some of the stupidest questions I've ever heard. Are you in favor of like cutting taxes? That was the line of logic in these questions.
That is absolutely ridiculous. I mean,
this
is one of those times when Fox News would have done themselves a favor and stepped up a little bit. And so like, okay, what exactly? You know, like, you know,
the problem was it was MSNBC. I mean, I think what's going on here is MSNBC is often portrayed by the righty conspiracy theorists nut jobs as liberally biased.
Yeah,
they intentionally went out of their way to be as gentle on those candidates as they could.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's the first debate, and you know what? Really, nobody has much to say.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. They're all out stumping. They don't have
a
lot
to say. This is the teaser. That's all it is.
But you could ask them some issue-oriented questions.
Yeah.
It was like they were all on Larry King Live.
Mm-hmm.
It really was, and it was like, well,
so this is more like Diane Sawyer
softball?
Than anything else. Like this,
what's that?
This is more like Diane Sawyer than anything else.
Oh yeah,
not,
this is
not Larry King stuff. Live. At least Larry King can, you know, can eke in a tough question here and there.
Every
you know, but Diane Sawyer definitely not. Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why all the murderers want to go on Larry King.
Right.
Because Larry sits there and goes, well, gee, did you do it? And of course
yeah.
they go, no. And Larry goes, well, good enough for me.
Yeah.
I mean, Larry King is not 60 Minutes. It's not Meet the Press.
Right.
You know, I just wish they would have let Ruster do this debate.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but see, they can't let Ruster do these debates very often because things get really contentious when he does the debate.
Oh, just
although
a little.
I got to say, Chris Matthews did a better job enforcing the time constraints than Brian Williams did.
Yes.
I mean, Chris Matthews was on top of it as far as keeping the debate run. But
mm-hmm.
I think Chris suffers from the fact that he used to work for Carter,
yep.
and he doesn't want to appear liberal.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes out of his way to be nice to Republicans.
Right.
to try to prove his objectivity. I mean, because it's funny. Whatever side, I like Matthews just for the reason of whatever side he takes, the other side complains.
Yeah.
Liberals complain he's too conservative. Conservatives claim he's just a liberal.
Right. He's very much in that damned if you do, damned if you don't, you know, kind of scenario.
Yeah, so I think overall, I mean, the selection of questions was terrible. I mean, but overall, the running of the debate was all right. As I wrote in my column, you know, nobody really won this debate.
Yeah. Yeah, this is very much like in the same sort of, I don't want to bring it back to Spider-Man 3, but, you know, like the main problem with that movie was that there's too much packed into one movie. These
yeah.
are too many different candidates that all needed an equal amount of time to speak, and because of
yeah.
that, everything got the short end of the stick.
Well, I believe the next GOP debate is going to be in South Carolina, and they already have a 1% poll threshold for the candidates. If anybody doesn't have over 1% in the polls, they're on the way to the debate.
Mm.
So that's going to cut down the field
yeah.
by at least maybe 3 or 4 people. I mean, the sad thing is it's probably going to take Ron Paul out of this field.
Which,
and I thought Ron Paul was the only real conservative there.
Yeah, he was, and not only that, but he was practically rubbing his conservatism into everybody else's face, and it was refreshing to see it. Because
yeah,
talking
I mean,
about how
we're Democrats, but I'll be honest, I respect true conservatism.
Yeah,
I respect people who really are conservative and they believe it.
Right, and the main thing that really did it for me was not only was Ron Paul like in the driver's seat when it came to the Iraq War because he didn't support it from the beginning.
Yeah.
But then he also brought up the fact that how did they win in 2000 by choosing like you know true conservative issues, and one of the big ones was not policing the world.
Yeah,
and I thought that was great.
Ron Paul won my heart simply by bringing up what's the wrong that's in warrantless wiretapping,
mm-hmm.
the wrong in domestic spying. It's wrong, period, but it goes against conservative values.
Yeah.
Conservatives are probably the last people you would expect to want to expand the federal government and spy on people,
mm-hmm.
normally, by tradition.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's all changed.
Definitely.
You know, it used to be like, oh, the Democrats want to expand the government, want to look into your lives, but now we have to watch out for the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just have this institutional imperial presidency federalization. Kind of like you have to remember, the Bush people, a lot of them, the older ones, are Nixon people.
Right.
Cheney, et cetera. They're Nixon people. So they have that same philosophy on the imperial presidency that Nixon did.
Mm-hmm.
That the president is above the law. The president is the law.
Right.
And that's what you're seeing in this administration. And that's why people should have been really freaked out as soon as they saw who Canada Bush was surrounding himself with. But, yeah, this debate was a great – and you got to see all the parts where Ronald Reagan's name was mentioned.
Oh, yeah. That was that was almost like, you know – just
shameless ass-kissing,
oh, it was
perhaps?
That was probably the most bit of blatant, you know, like ass-kissing that I'd ever seen.
I mean, I called it – parasitical bastardization of Ronald Reagan's name.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was. Because these people, except for Ron Paul on that stage, Ronald Reagan would have laughed at Rudy Giuliani.
Yes, he would have.
I mean, I am no Reagan fan by any stretch of the imagination, but my thing I always come back to with Reagan when people say about how terrible he was, I'm like, yeah, he was pretty bad if you're a Democrat like me, but we knew where Reagan stood.
Right.
Reagan didn't try to fool anybody. Reagan was Reagan, you know?
Yeah.
And that's and Giuliani, I thought Giuliani really had an underwhelming performance.
Yes. With the exception of his first answer, you know, like
yeah,
when he talked about when he brought up about how he cleaned up New York and everything. And yeah, you know, like I'll be the first one to say it. You know, like he did a terrific job, cleaning up like the bad element, you know, like over here. He just happened to do it right when I was, you know, coming back to New York from Virginia to go to college here. And it was great. It was just like I can walk around here without a problem.
Yeah.
And it felt good about that. I felt good about being a New Yorker.
The problem is Rudy Giuliani knows a lot about prosecuting criminals. He's a great prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
Great attorney, pretty good mayor, knows nothing about much else, it seems.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you see him fumble on the answer between the difference between a Shiite and a Sunni?
Not that part, but I did.
I don't know
see
if you're conked out by then. He really had trouble with that answer, and for somebody who's supposed to be a national security expert and blah blah blah. Which, by the way, calling Giuliani a national security expert is a lot like calling Ray Nagin an expert on floods. Just because something
just because
happened
they've
while
been
you were
in
mayor.
It doesn't mean that you know like that they're an expert on it.
Yes, yes, I don't want Ray Nagin inspecting the dams and bridges in America. And I don't think Rudy Giuliani's qualified to prevent terrorism.
Right.
He's got a lot of strengths, but what he's trying to play himself as doesn't work with his strengths.
Exactly.
If that makes sense.
Oh, it does. It does. You know, like because I mean, you know, like yeah, I remember, you know, like I remember the, you know, like the, you know, the job, the quote unquote job that he did, you know, during 9/11. I mean, like yeah, he did a fine job and everything, kind of, you know, keeping the peace and everything, and just kind of alerting everybody to the situation. But at the same time, it was just like, you know, like he did it, you know, he went through it and everything, then he went to a Met game, and that he considered to be a huge sacrifice because he's a Yankee fan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, okay, Rudy, you're good at kind of calming people down and holding the fort when something bad happens. You're good at crisis management.
Mm-hmm.
Crisis management and national security policy are not the same thing.
Right.
And I'm telling you, his answer on abortion just killed him.
Oh, Roe v. being overturned would be
and
okay.
What would happen if they returned? Yeah. And his whole abortion came up twice, and his answers just killed him.
Yeah.
You could literally hear a pin drop in that room.
You could hear his poll numbers dropping.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I got an email from a reader today who said that they thought I was off on the Giuliani criticism, and they said, well, it's great because Rudy can pick up Democrats and independents, and I said, I wrote back, well, for every Democrat or independent he picks up, he's going to lose support with hardcore social conservatives or red state Bible Belt conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to net gain anything.
I know.
Because, I mean, when he went to South Carolina, he was up in the poll before he went to South Carolina and campaigned, and right now South Carolina is pushing through tighter abortion restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Giuliani gave his pro-choice position there in front, with two state legislatures beside him at a press conference. His poll numbers, he fell to third in the polls in South Carolina within a week.
Wow.
In fact, some of the people, some of the experts in South Carolina right now are saying that he should just write off the state.
Yeah.
He's for the GOP primary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what's going to – I don't think he's going to play well in the Deep South.
Oh, he's definitely not going to play well in Deep South because everybody's going to look at him just as a New York candidate. You know, like that's basically
yeah.
what he is. You know, like he's an attorney from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, like that's – he's an he's like an Italian guy from Brooklyn, New York. And that played off great over here. But it's not going to play off great down there.
That's the thing. Like the people that get a hold of me and they say, wow, I really like Giuliani, are either blue state Republicans or Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, look at the map.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the Republican strength is in the South and in the West and, you know, somewhat in the Midwest. But the Midwest is a little more divided than people think. But he's not going to play well in those places.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have the social conservatism to play well in those places.
Right.
And speaking of social conservatism, our Huckabee Award winners, yes, I said winners.
Yes.
We'll be talking about them after the 2 o'clock news. But I will tip my hand a little bit and say, George, do you believe in evolution?
My hand's
raised. Did you get to that part of the debate?
No, I actually, I didn't. I wish I did. I really, really
After
wish
you
I did.
The show of hands questions. Who here believes in evolution?
There were three people that didn't raise their hand. Is that correct?
Who doesn't believe in evolution? And three people raised their hand.
Okay, yeah. That's
yeah.
Oh man, it's one of those things you really that you don't really want to make fun of, but at the same time, you just have no choice.
You know, it's 2 o'clock. Let's go to Will's news for a few minutes. We'll be right back.
All right.
The Political Universe time is 2 p.m. Here is the news. The Arctic ice shelf could melt sooner than what the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change originally predicted it would. The Arctic ice shelf could melt by as soon as 2020 instead of what the IPCC predicted of the year 2050, according to a press release by the National Snow and Ice Data Center and the National Center for Atmospheric Research. Satellite and other types of observations show that the Arctic ice cover is retreating more rapidly than that was indicated by any of the 18 computer models that were used by the IPCC in its 2007 assessments. According to Julianne Strobe, who led the study, said, quote, "This suggests that current model projections may in fact provide a conservative estimate of future Arctic change and that the summer Arctic sea ice may disappear considerably earlier than IPCC projections," end quote. When the IPCC computer model runs, it was discovered that on average the model projections simulated a loss of September ice cover of 2.5% per decade from 1953 to 2006. But newly received data blended with ship and aircraft reports show the September ice decline of about 7.8% per decade during the 1953 to 2006 period. The authors speculate that the computer models possibly failed to capture the impact of increased carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. The Arctic ice shelf plays a major role in cooling the Earth since it reflects light back into space, whereas areas of open water, which are expanding, absorb sunlight and increase temperatures. A powerful mile-wide tornado ripped through the town of Greensburg, Kansas the other day, leaving 9 people dead and leaving City Hall, 2 schools, and most of the town in ruins. According to town manager Steve Hewitt, quote, "I believe 95% of our community is gone, and all of my downtown is gone, my home is gone, my staff's homes are gone," end quote. He went on to say that, quote, "It's going to be tough," end quote. The town is currently under a state of emergency. After consulting with bipartisan Congressional Advisory Council, Secretary of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff placed Senator Barack Obama under the protection of the Secret Service. This comes after Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois received word that racially motivated remarks that was posted in letters and websites. Senator Durbin then alerted Majority Senate Leader Harry Reid that Senator Obama's safety might be of some concern. This would make the earliest that protection of a presidential candidate under the care of the Secret Service had ever been placed on a candidate. Normally, protection of candidates does not begin until election year. In the war in Iraq, Democratic leaders are considering trying a new strategy that if certain goals and objectives are not met by the Iraqi government, funding for the war could only last through July. President Bush is challenging that Congress to pass a war funding bill with no strings attached. You are listening to The Political Universe here on Blog Talk Radio. Now back to Jason Easley.
Okay, thank you, Will. Thank you for turning in that report. There's George again.
Yes.
Okay, George. Now, I'm glad Will brought up Barack Obama and the Secret Service. There's no truth to the rumor that Barack Obama was given Secret Service protection to keep Joe Biden away from him.
Is that the rumor? Wait a minute. Hold on.
Well,
did I miss something
up,
here? Hold on. You're like...
This
is the rumor that was going on to keep Joe Biden away from him?
Yeah, he's giving Secret Service protection because he didn't want Joe Biden to make any more remarks about him being neat and clean.
Nice.
Okay. Now, yeah, I just made it up.
Hold on one second. You know,
your left side started to go numb.
I know it's 2:05, but it's still a Sunday here, so.
You're like, no. Joe's fine, man. He would never say anything like that.
Joe Biden standing at, you know, like over at a book depository with a rifle in his hand.
Joe Biden keeps going over to Barack Obama with a lint brush and going,
right.
No, Lint, you're just amazing.
And clean.
That was just a terrible, terrible joke.
I know.
Oh, boy. But, now, back to this debate. I mean, did anyone on the Republican side actually impress you?
The only one that really impressed me was Representative Paul. You know, like, that was the only one that really seemed to know what, you know, like, what was going on, like, know what was, what, you know, like, what he was really kind of, you know, pressing for. He was pressing for, you know, like, he was leaning towards conservative beliefs, true conservative beliefs, and he didn't have the albatross of Iraq around his neck.
And even better, he believes in evolution.
Yeah.
He actually believes that evolution occurred.
Yeah.
now let's talk about, is it possible for the Democrats to be overconfident? If you're a Democrat and you're just me and you and I, we watch the debate, is it possible to think, man, look at this group of losers. We got this baby locked up.
It's possible to believe that, but at the same time, you know, like anything could happen. We saw it in 2000. We saw it again in 2004. You know, like this is just a situation where literally anything can happen. And, you know, like they're saying, like, you know, people can go by the anybody but Bush, you know, kind of thinking. But at the same time, they're kind of thrilled with the fact that they don't have to do that anymore, because he's not a candidate anymore. So when it comes down to it, it levels out the playing field for basically everybody else.
Hey, did you also notice whose name wasn't mentioned through the entire debate? Dick Cheney.
Yes. I know that they mentioned Bush, but I did notice
Bush
that.
By name only when they specifically had to, except for John McCain.
Right.
John McCain, who's Bush's BFF,
mm-hmm.
Mentioned Bush all the time by name, but the other candidates only mentioned Bush by name for the last question of the debate when they were specifically asked, what would you change about the Bush presidency? Oh, one of the other questions was, what Bush cabinet member would you keep for your own administration?
Right. Yeah, I remember that there was I didn't get to see the actual question, but I know that there was a question about Karl Rove.
Oh, yeah, and that was pretty much easily, would you keep Karl Rove? Would you? And they asked Gilmore, who used Karl Rove, worked with Karl Rove before in Virginia. You know, most of those candidates have no business being on that stage.
Yeah.
None at all.
Yeah, it just seemed like, are you running for president? Yeah, okay, come on up.
You know, and I can understand now. Remember when we broke down the numbers last week and it was like 60% of the Republicans were pretty much unhappy with their choices so far?
Yeah.
As far as the poll said. Yeah, I can see why now. I have seen them all individually at various times. By the way, the most underwhelming performance of the night had to be Tommy Thompson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tommy Thompson, who needs to, he's like an 18-term governor in Wisconsin. Look at the camera.
Yeah.
Look at the camera.
Ugh.
I mean, this is like rule number one when you're working with candidates. They need to make that visual connection with the viewer.
Yeah.
He was always looking to the side, looking off into the distance. I don't know, maybe thinking about the Packers' chances next season. I don't know. Wasn't looking at the camera, connecting with the people watching the debate. Oh, and his answers were pretty. The other thing that really pissed me off about the debate, the three former governors got into a whole "I vetoed more bills than you did" discussion.
Right.
We had Gilmore, Thompson, and Romney trying to say who was the more hard-ass Republican because they vetoed more legislation.
Yeah. It was basically like, you know, like it was ridiculous. Like there was so much, there's so many different people that were up there and everything, and there were so little personalities and so little
and then,
of nothing.
And then
to,
Duncan Hunter would stand in the corner and scream, but we need a bigger border fence.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, okay, now, he's like, oh, well, I don't know if you saw this part, but they asked him about the border fence. He said, well, the fence that I put in San Diego, like he physically went down there and put it in. You know, I put the fence in San Diego, and everything went down by 90%, all the illegal activity. Well, duh, there's
right.
a better fence there. They just moved down the road.
Yeah. They just looked for the end of the fence and then they walked around it.
Yes. Maybe they went under the fence. Maybe they went over the fence.
Right. They just went around
maybe
it.
Maybe they said, you know what? This fence is really high. If I go 5 miles left or right, there's no fence there. Mm-hmm. Which even if you put a fence, even if you put that kind of fence all across the border and spend, oh, like they said it would cost about $300 billion to do that, mm-hmm. or even like half the border.
Right.
even if you did that, there's people are still going to come in.
Yeah.
It's not going to solve the problem. And I personally, as an American, don't want to be fenced in my own country.
Right. Yeah, like it goes right back to the whole like Pappy Kenna thing that he was trying to do in 96, the whole Fortress America idea.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I also grabbed Chuck Schumer's Democratic response to the president's radio address yesterday.
This
is about the Iraq War funding. It's about 2 minutes long, but I have a purpose for playing this, and you'll hear right after I'm done.
Good morning.
I think this is Chuck. It might be. Schumer, I hope I put the right file on it, not George W. Bush.
On Tuesday, we in Congress sent President Bush an emergency spending bill that did two things. It fully funded our troops, because we will never leave our troops stranded. And at the same time, it required the president to change the mission in Iraq to what should be our first and foremost goal, counterterrorism. This war has devolved into something the president never mentioned when he asked our country to go to war in Iraq, and something that we never bargained for, policing a civil war between Sunnis and Shiites. The Sunnis and Shiites have been bitter enemies long before we got there, and that will continue long after we leave. It's simply not the job of America or our troops to stand in the middle of a civil war as Sunnis and Shiites shoot at one another and pay no heed to the central government while our troops are caught in the crosshairs. Our legislation requires that 1 year from now, our mission fully change away from policing a civil war and towards three narrow goals: protecting U.S. troops, training Iraqi forces, and conducting counterterrorism operations. This will require many fewer troops in Iraq, and those that will remain will be largely out of harm's way, but will have the ability to take out any al-Qaeda camps that might pose a threat to America. This is a plan that makes sense to so many of our generals, the troops on the ground, the American people, and people around the world. Unfortunately, the president vetoed our resolution. But that will not deter us from finding other ways to achieve our two goals: fully supporting the troops while dramatically changing our mission. No amount of name-calling, hyperbole, or imputation that we don't support the troops will deter us from these goals. We know how strongly the president feels that he is right, but if he looked at the facts on the ground, he would have to come to the conclusion that most Americans have. We need a change in direction. Even General Petraeus, who spoke with Congress last week, agrees that a military solution alone cannot work. Mr. President, we know you oppose the resolution that Congress sent you last week, but on behalf of the American people and our soldiers, we ask you to work with us to find a way to both fund the troops and change the mission. The American people, and most of all, our brave soldiers, deserve no less. I'm Senator Chuck Schumer. Thank you for listening.
What the hell was wrong with Chuck Schumer yesterday morning? What the hell? I mean, I saw Chuck on Charlie Rose talk about this same stuff no more than a few days ago, and he was peppy and lively. Was Chuck Schumer on Ambien? Was he trying to send subliminal messages? Was he trying to send messages?
This
was like one of those self-help tapes.
I know, it was just such like a quiet, you know, like tone of voice, you know, very, you know, like laid,
smoking.
Very laid back and everything.
Smoking.
Yeah.
You don't want a cigarette. I'm like, oh my God, I don't support the troops. Yeah, they'll quit smoking. Now, let me tell you what, and then I thought about it. I thought about this like all last night, and I finally came up with the reason. Here, George, is the reason.
No stems, no seeds that you don't need. Acapulco Gold is
badass weed.
Chuck Schumer must have been stoned.
Yeah.
He sounded high.
Because,
like, he sounded like somebody who was trying to keep it together while they were stoned. Okay? Dude, I gotta go get that bag of Doritos and a Coke.
Oh,
I have
man.
The munchies. dude, I have to get through 2 minutes and 45 seconds talking about war funding. I really want a bag of Fritos. Can I have the Fritos when I'm done? I listened to this yesterday afternoon, and I thought to myself, good Lord, what's wrong with him?
Right.
I mean,
it's like he's saying like some good things and everything. He's definitely
he's talking like this.
Right.
It's like all of a sudden he was possessed by John Kerry.
Right. He's a little bit livelier than that.
The power of FDR compels you. Out, John Kerry. You're not a Chuck Schumer. No, I'm serious. Like, Chuck's not a really lively guy.
Yeah.
And he's the number three ranking Democrat, and he's really, really a good interview. I mean,
yes.
I'll be honest, if I could somehow have pictures of Chuck Schumer that would force him to come on this show and talk to us,
mm-hmm.
I would do it in a second. I mean,
yeah.
I still want to have Mike Gravel on this show.
Oh, definitely.
I mean,
talk about lively. You know, like, that's somebody
who... He could talk about Spider-Man 3 for 45 minutes and how that's more important to the war on terror than the war in Iraq is.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I had to play that Chuck Schumer clip because maybe he was on Ambien.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he had a cold.
Right.
You know, but the thing is, when you look at Chuck, one of your New York senators works really hard and has done a lot for the people of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one's running for president.
Right.
I mean, you know, you live in New York. I mean, Chuck Schumer is a real force.
Yeah, he is. You know, like, he is a real force. And he's somebody that people, you know, like, have been able to really get behind and everything. And he has been able to, you know, to really bring about some emotion, you know, and it seems like, you know, he could definitely use some himself over there. You know, like, it was just really, you know, like, I mean, I was definitely keeping up with him. I was definitely, you know, understanding what he was saying, and I was able to, you know, like, agree with what he was saying. But at the same time, it's just like, dude, if all you needed was, like, a shot of adrenaline, like Mia Wallace, like, right into the heart, you know, like, then...
Yeah.
Then,
I just wanted to say the same thing. I just wanted to hand the poor guy a Jolt Cola.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and be like, take three hits of this, then go do the radio response.
Yeah,
know?
I mean, like, he needed the enthusiasm of Max Kellerman doing last night's De La Hoya fight. Just, you know, like, just... Take 37 Red Bulls and pour them down his throat.
Oh, was Max doing the fight last night?
He was doing like the high above. He wasn't commentating it with, like, you know, with Jim Lampley and Larry Murphy.
I like Max unboxing, man.
Max is interesting. He was a little too wound up when he was doing his appearance in Rocky Balboa.
Yeah.
He was the same. Just saying, like, I used to watch Rocky Balboa over and, you know, like, when I was a kid, and now all of a sudden I'm calling one of his fights.
Max was really buying into the dream right there.
Yeah.
I love Max. I don't know if Tucker Carlson still has him on his show.
Right.
But that was great stuff when Tucker Carlson would have Max Kellerman on.
Because
you just knew that Tucker just wanted Max, like, he kept telling people, don't give Max any caffeine before the show.
Right. He doesn't
somebody
need it.
Somebody would always sneak him that extra Mountain Dew.
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes before airtime, and Max is, like, bouncing off the wall. And he's not even talking about the topic anymore.
Right.
He's rambling.
But I'll give him this. I'll give him this. The man is animated. The man is emotional.
Yeah.
He gets, like,
yeah.
He gets really into what he's saying, and that's something that we need a little bit of in Chuck Schumer.
In our politics.
You know, like, especially, and... Basically, in any of our leaders, because, you know, that's the thing, that's the main thing, is just, like, the only time when any of our leaders or our potential leaders are getting emotional, it seems like it's all staged. Nothing seems genuine anymore.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's killing me, and about all of the candidates on the Democratic side and the Republican side. Even
You have a bunch of, to take a radio song lyric, you have a bunch of fake plastic candidates or fake plastic trees. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. It really stands out in the Republican field. Because some of the Democrats, two of them in particular, have really good natural charisma.
Mm-hmm.
Edwards and Obama.
Yeah.
In Republicans, man, that was a dead field.
Yeah.
You can just tell. I mean, they got no personality, no charisma. Nothing connects. Rudy Giuliani isn't sure what he is.
Right.
Is he a moderate Republican? Does he want – see, Giuliani's caught in the McCain trap.
Mm-hmm.
He feels like he has to move to the right to get the hardcore Republican votes.
Right.
But by moving to the right, he's alienating his traditional base of support.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that Giuliani's ready to be president. I mean, being mayor, even of New York is probably is the most important city in the world, or one of the top three.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge responsibility. But it's still local politics, and local
right.
politics is a world different from state politics, which is light years different from federal politics.
It was a very simple way for him to basically. It was a very simple way for him to really kind of get the, get the people of New York behind him, and that was simply to clean it up. He cleaned it up and everything,
yeah.
and he got the tourism rate up, he got Times Square looking great, he got everything just basically just working up and up. He was making people feel good about being New Yorkers. That doesn't play with the entire country. There's too many different elements that make up this country.
Too many different constituencies, and I mean, the thing that really worries me is Giuliani's never dealt with a southern issue, a western issue, a rural issue.
Right.
He's an urban politician.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's no fault. I mean, New York's an urban city. What are you going to do?
Exactly.
But, he doesn't have any experience in anything else.
Right.
Mayor of New York does not give you foreign policy experience.
Yeah.
I would argue that at this time, we desperately need somebody with some foreign policy experience, or at least an understanding of foreign policy.
Somebody who can actually deal with foreign policy.
All the candidates in this field, except for Rambo McCain,
mm-hmm.
Don't have that. And McCain picked the wrong damn foreign policy.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I honestly believe that if McCain would have come out, and not come out against this war, but just distance himself from this war policy, he would be winning right now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people want to like John McCain, but he has just killed himself with the Iraq War issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that he really believes it, and I understand he's a good soldier, and I respect him for being true to his beliefs. But it's going to cost him an election.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He wants to be president so badly that he figures that if he can appeal to that 30% of the public that stands behind Bush, which, let's face it, all that's the Republican Party.
Right.
That's the hardcore. That's the hardcore, no matter. The Republican Party could run a broomstick with a Hitler mustache, and they would pull the lever.
Yeah.
Okay? They would vote for anything with the R beside it. I mean, but he's not – he's just going to alienate 70% of the country when he gets to run the general election and get stomped.
Which is such a shame considering, how good he could have had it if he just stuck to the same guns that he had in 2000.
Yeah, if he just would have stuck to his principles and stood on his own instead of giving in and trying to be what he thinks the Republican Party needs him to be.
Right.
We're talking about if McCain wins the nomination, he could face a Bob Dole-style ass-whooping.
Yeah, I mean, this is – what he's got, What McCain has done, from 2000 to 2004 to 2008, what he basically did was he was the kid at school who was able to get kids and everything to really kind of believe in him and everything, and then all of a sudden here comes this other kid who gives him a wedgie, takes his lunch money and wins all this popularity. Then all of a sudden it's time for that bully kid to run for president. And the kid who got the wedgie and got his lunch money stolen is speaking for him.
Yeah.
It's like
McCain's had his spirit broken. It really is.
Yeah.
How can a man survive that many years in a Viet Cong prison camp, but he can't survive the relentlessness of Karl Rove and George W. Bush?
It's ridiculous. I mean, it was really shameful. And it made me lose all respect for him.
I can't say enough how much I respect John McCain as a person.
I really
do. I used to until he started doing this. Now, if this is all just shameless political maneuvering to win a nomination, which I kind of have a hunch it is,
mm-hmm.
This is just deplorable.
Yeah.
I mean, and strategically speaking, it might be the worst political mistake in a campaign since Michael Dukakis hopped in the tank for a picture.
Yeah. This is really...
Now, if we play the what-if game, can you see Mitt Romney as the what-if Republican nominee?
I can see it.
And how does
I can
Mitt
see it.
Do?
He's not only seemed to give, a lot of, correct answers during the, a lot of, decent answers and everything during the, you know, during the debate and everything. But at the same time, like, he's starting to get the media to look in his direction. And that's something – that's a very important tool that people are starting to realize.
How does Mitt do in a general election against either Hillary or Obama?
Will he do well against Hillary or Obama?
Either or.
I think
you could split them up.
I think so. You know, like, I think so, considering that considering that somebody's got to, be in that other spot and everything. Like, people are – the Republicans right now are just looking at, who's going to give us the best chance to win. That's not who is the better candidate. It's who's going to give us the best chance to win.
When the Democrats tried to pull that, that's the worst way to go.
Yeah.
When you start trying to pick your candidate based on electability instead of whether or not you actually like the candidate and the candidate represents your party, John Kerry was considered an electable candidate.
Right. And that's
John Kerry was a terrible candidate.
Yeah. I know.
So when a party starts looking that direction, they're desperate.
Yeah.
I personally think Mitt Romney, because he's a Mormon, is never going to win in the conservative Christian base.
Right.
He has no chance. He might be lucky enough to get himself up to 20% of the vote, but he's not gonna. If he would happen to win the nomination, Barack Obama will destroy him.
But at the same time, though, that's the one interesting thing about this is that you have both, when you're saying like Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, or Mitt Romney, there are three very interesting candidates because they all represent something that we have not had yet. And it could
change.
And that could be it. Even the conservative Christians and everything, even though, they don't, necessarily agree with Mitt Romney and everything, there is a possibility of them just possibly coming around to that side.
Dude, they hate Mormons.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
They're taught as evangelicals that Mormonism is a cult.
Right.
And there's no way. There's just absolutely no way they'll vote for Mitt Romney. They will vote for Barack Obama, a good Christian boy. And I say boy as in the male gender sense, not the racial sense.
Well, you definitely got a point there.
Just so people start calling me Joe Biden. They will vote for Barack Obama, a good Christian guy, before they ever vote for Mitt Romney. And I think Giuliani's going to struggle, too. I think Giuliani will run well in the blue states.
Yeah, Giuliani will get stomped in the red states.
He'll get killed. And I think if it would happen to be John Edwards running as the Democratic nominee in the red states, the election's over. The red states are going to vote for the white Southern dude.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. They're going to vote for the white Southern dude over the northern lawyer, the northern Italian guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's just how it is. I mean, they're not going to vote for Rudy pro-choice Giuliani, anti-gun Giuliani.
Definitely
and by
not.
The way, I got to commend Giuliani, though, because being a prosecutor, there's nothing that offends me more than a prosecutor who is pro-gun.
Yeah.
How hypocritical is that?
Right.
When you see the number of gun crimes committed in this country.
And then you stand, against gun control.
Yeah.
And
if you want to be Rudy Giuliani, and Giuliani's at least consistent. Like, the things that people like about him on the other sides, we said this before in one of your early appearances, if Giuliani wins the presidency, it's not a bad day for Democrats.
No.
I mean,
there's so many different issues that are going to be looked at as, well, okay, that's safe.
I mean, can you imagine the Supreme Court justices Giuliani will appoint? They'll be moderate pro-choicers.
Yeah.
I mean, Roe versus Wade is safe.
Oh, definitely.
I see my red light. We're in the last 2 minutes of the show. What do you want to plug?
I'd want to plug, again, this Thursday, the UBS Evening News will have my full breakdown of Spider-Man 3 as well as the other news. And the day before, my Scene Anatomy 101 column will have a special Mother's Day column that you'll be able to forward on to your mothers. It will be a fun one.
Oh, you're going to do Throw Mama from the Train?
No. I actually contacted my mother and everything and talked to her about, what one of her favorite scenes from one of her favorite films is, so.
The Exorcist?
Surprisingly not.
That's my mother. Growing up as a kid, my mother, we used to watch all those horror movies together.
Oh, that's great.
Salem's Lot, The Exorcist, and it would scare the holy hell out of us, and she thought it was a good deal of fun, which is why I am the way I am today.
Okay. That's starting to explain a lot.
It kind of does, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, like, next Sunday we will be doing, I would love to have our moms on the show next Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it might be an idea, actually, for Mother's Day.
That is a good idea, yeah.
We'll look into it and see what we can do.
Okay.
Well, George, for the last 25 seconds, I want you to remember one really important lesson.
No stems, no seeds that you don't need. Acapulco Gold is...
bad as we...
Always remember that. For George, this is Jason. You've been listening to the TPU Radio. We'll be back next Sunday at 1:30. Have a great week, and we'll see you then.
Take
care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.